banks are safe, there's enough cash in the financial system, and there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve. An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I have been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now. Arbitrage on this trend has been margin called.
I think you was a hook. Trust to your idols, now they got you shook. Believe in the crooks. Other the same. Are they cooking the books? Save up a decade, almost in a day. Now the new rap is getting away. Bigger the bag. Bigger rap on the fact. When it all blows up, it is you who will pay.
Pull back the curtains and what do you get? It's the risk with a bit of your net. Made from your savings and stole 1K. Give it to this other side of the trade. Socialized lessons while we've been the game. First to fall in the straight with small. Cause you're just a part of the continuity stream.
Money talks and pay for the show. Pay for the cloud. Pay for the thrill. Pay for the media to lie to our thanks. Taught the truth so we repeat our mistakes. Fell off the dream that never delivered. While we're healing fees and clipping the tickets. Siphoning funds from the mouthless bigot. Blindly the blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth. Can we go to risks don't really know. The sire will go to a damaged collateral. Another excuse for oppressive control. We know the mixture was part of the play. Reap is a value at the end of the day. We're calling for help, but nobody came. We bail out to pawn and complain.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex and fallible, humans left unchecked. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked. And other economies are largely empty.
What would happen if we take the money out of the systems? Why protest our labor when we can pull out capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Simply by holding purchasing power. How do we build a base? Replace the control interface with the will of free markets.
And then independent systems to remove them if they're crushed.
Step two.
Move the savings in their systems to know we can have it in touch.
Step three.
Our savings, venture, and all activities move this way. We don't own everything, check. We don't have a positive to you.
I'm thinking where we're tired of our desire and our work and the time earning a larger piece of the pie or in yours to get in the pie. Money is out of our work. What's the edge?
So we can move value without being censored. Move on from gambling savings. Move on from all of the politics. Move on to the end of the internet.
So we don't have to trust every word that they say. So the freedom and wealth can be taken away.
So we treat and punish all the same.
So we can get to the top of this game.
Knowing the truth will break the frame. Now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, episode 155. I want to thank all of you for tuning in to us for 155 episodes. That means a lot to me. It means a lot to my co-host, Bob Van Kirk, and it means a lot to all the other guys who come up here every single day. I do want to say thank you to L, Jeff, IT, Iote, Montani, Plebed, DR7, Megacab, Rook, Taggart, Pedro, Free Range, Bitcoin for Presidents, Coach John, The Real Bitcoin, ZMAC, KY Hoddle, BitCat, and Ben for tuning in here this morning. Again, I say this every day, but it does mean a lot to me that you all are tuning into this. There's a lot of other spaces out there that you could be listening to, a lot of other things you could be doing. So again, I really do appreciate that. But I am your host, Coleman, and I am joined by co-host Bob Van Kirk. Good morning, sir. What do you make of all of this, for lack of a better word, nonsense that's going on with the White House, with the market, with these tit-for-tat escalation measures? And let's just get your thoughts on this, Bob.
Yeah, there's a ton going on. And good morning, Coleman. Good morning, everybody. Interesting times we live in, right? Never ceases to amaze us. I think we are at a point where it's still very early in this, what I think a lot of people are starting to see as a trade war, especially as you see escalating tensions with China and the U.S. It looks like even Europe today has announced this morning that they're going to pick and choose some places to add tariffs to U.S. goods. And so this thing's just heating up. So if people thought, hey, you know, the end of last week, beginning of this week, you know, this should all settle itself out sometime soon, I'm not so sure. And that's okay if you are someone who, you know, has immense amount of wealth. But for a lot of folks, this is painful. Lots of people are paying way more attention to their long-term investments like their 401ks and IRAs than they should be. You know, I guess the big question remains, like, what does this mean for markets and Bitcoin in the long term? I think we can all see what it's doing in the short term. Lots of uncertainty. When do people get clarity? And then what does that mean for these assets that we're all holding on to, including for some people, their real estate, right? Still, for a lot of folks, the real estate is their largest asset. And so it's not just the 60% of people who have exposure to equities by way of the stock market. It's also the folks who are looking at, you know, does this mean a major correction in stock price, or yeah, a major correction in real estate? And so we'll just have to see. Those are kind of my initial thoughts. I'll kick it back to you or others that have joined us on the stage.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of uncertainty, Bob, and I think that's pretty evident with the way the market just on a roller coaster ride right now. We're hearing different things being spouted from different members of the White House from different roles. And I just don't think anybody really understands what's going on and what's really the whole point of this. You know, I believe the initial narrative that they were trying to drive down treasury yields because they have so much that has to be refinanced in the first couple of months here, or the next couple of months. And that obviously didn't work, or that wasn't their goal, because the rates are going up to multi-month highs. And with the 30-year, it's multi-year highs. I think something that's not really getting a lot of coverage yet today, I think there's a bond auction that's going to happen this afternoon. And that will be very interesting to see. They had a 3-year auction that went yesterday. It was the third largest tail, so it didn't have a lot of demand at the end. So I think what's going to happen over the next couple of hours here with that treasury auction will be really telling. And, you know, a lot of this is over my head, so I try and listen to people who I believe are experts. And I think someone who's a friend of the Bitcoin veterans, Lawrence Lepard, just wrote a book. It was called The Big Print. And I think the timing on that might be almost perfect, because it appears like there's a lot of things that are starting to show signs of weakness in the treasury markets globally. And it looks like if this treasury auction today falters a little bit, I think you're going to see a louder choir come out singing that the Fed is going to have to, or Powell is going to have to start intervening and doing something. So it'll be interesting to tell. BitPetro, Texas Toast, or Yomar, do you have any counter thoughts or opinions on what's been said?
Man, this is, you know, when I voted for Trump, I didn't really think that he was going to jump on the Soros bandwagon and do some nice slamming in the bond market, but I'm here for it with popcorn.
And let's bring this back into, oh, go ahead, Yomar.
I think you're right when you say, like, it the dust has not settled yet. You know, like, the markets are bouncing back and forth. I don't know what to make of it. I'm not like a you know, an intelligent investor, I'd say, you know. Like, this is all you know, beyond me. I'm just like watching it go, you know, from green to deep red to green, like. But like the thing, like, it going red makes sense to me, but it bouncing back to green does not make sense to me because like nothing changes. You know what I mean? It's not like there's, any credible rumors.
No. That's traders, man. I mean, look, the general reaction of markets is that if you have an oversold or overbought condition, that a trader is going to take advantage of that on a short-term basis. Over a long-term basis, that's going to erode away and you still have the general market trend doing what it's doing. So if you're in a period of uncertainty, the general market trend is fear-based because markets trade on psychology. So as long as we are in fear mode, we're in fight or flight. I'm sorry, guys. Like, that's where we're at. And I just don't see how we are anywhere near turning that corner where we're not in fight or flight because, shit, I mean, has anybody done the math on tariffs for ASICs? Holy crap. I'll tell you what, the Zeta hash moment has been put on pause.
I saw one interesting post. It wasn't about ASICs, but it was a guy. He owns a small business that makes toys and products for like kids with autism or whatever. And he was saying like the order that he has out right now, last year, would have cost him $4,700 roughly in tariffs. And then with the initial swing of tariffs, it was like something like $91,000 in tariffs. And then with the additional 50% that was tacked onto it, he was at $191,000 in tariffs. And that's all due at port of entry. So like for him to be able to like get his goods and like sell them, you know, I don't know what the margin is on, toys and products for like autistic kids, but I imagine that his business is done, you know, cooked. It's going to be,
guys, I tried to warn you guys about this shit. I tried to warn you guys about that moment right there a few episodes back. I said, hey, look, the problem happens when store owners and business owners say, I don't want to sell anymore because I can't, because I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people are missing. Like there isn't, there's a very large gap from like, oh, the pain that you experience here. And then like coming out the other side where like there's manufacturing in the United States. It's not like, oh, I guess I'll just turn the lights on in this factory and start building this stuff here in the US. Like, there's years in between, at best the capabilities, you know, for us to start spinning it up, here. I don't know, like if they will eventually try to like balance things out to like some other country that has like some of the manufacturing capacity, but it's not going to be as much. I mean, like, whatever your, whatever people's like political reservations are with China, like their manufacturing, over the past, you know, decade or two, maybe, like the way that they have it set up there is like really impressive. You know, like I have friends that ordered, like some, mechanical equipment and stuff from there. And like you call them up and like you tell them all the specifications and stuff and they just can, you know, start pumping out this, like pretty complex stuff for you. I don't know if there's like the equivalent here in the United States. And I know certainly there's not the, equivalent capacity. So maybe there's like some shops that can do some similar things, but they're going to fill up quick, you know, and they're going to go to the highest bidder, and the highest bidder isn't going to be your local mom and pop shop. You know, it's going to be like the big, multinationals, like the Walmarts and the Amazons and stuff like that. So, you know, the same kind of, just be wary of like the same kind of things that happened during, COVID, I would say, you know, where the small shops were forced to close and the big shops just made more money. You know, that can be like one of the results of this, that these small shops are going to close. You know, that guy, I don't know, the one that I was talking about before, maybe he's got some patents on some stuff. You know, when he's beaten down and can't produce anything, you know, I'm sure Amazon will come knocking. Hey, we'll give you, you know, pennies on the dollar for your patents and your company name. Thank you. Have a nice day. And, you know,
Have you seen that video, of the guy like talking about all the different places and all the different people it takes to make a pencil?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it. Yeah. There was a one interesting one. I don't know if it's the same guy or not, but he tried to make a toaster from scratch and it was hilarious and, really, you know, eye opening for those that think that, you know, you can just kind of do things. But I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be hard times. You know, I think with the volatility, you know, trying to time like when you should buy, when you should sell is incredibly difficult. You know, just be cautious of, you know, trying to do anything right now. You know, the only thing that I feel, the only thing I'm not checking is like Bitcoin price. That's the only thing I feel comfortable with. You know what I mean? Like even the value of the dollar, you know, there's concerns there. I see like, you know, one thing I really don't understand is like bonds and bond markets and stuff. So I see like a bunch of chatter going on about those. You know, so I think that, you know, it's going to get really ugly, in a lot of ways. And I don't think that, a lot of people are prepared for it. I don't think they understand like follow on effects. You know, they'll laugh and cheer for tariffs. And you know, they think they're safe because they're, you know, they're doing construction or something like that, but they don't realize that like all the construction materials, where it's coming from and all this kind of stuff. So like there's, it's not going to be immediate, right? Like those are the ones that you'll feel probably months from now. You know, the
stock I got your back right there. So Microsoft has canceled in the order of $22 billion worth of data centers in the last few days.
Stateside?
Worldwide. Stateside, the number's about 5 B's.
Is that just because they can't get the infrastructure or the chips anymore at the price that they thought?
I just think it all went to shit. When, I mean, you have to understand that just like that pencil, a data center isn't just, you know, stuff from China or stuff from America. Like some of that stuff comes from Africa. Some of that stuff comes from Europe. It doesn't take a tribe. It takes the entire world to make some of these things. And that goes all the way down to the building. I mean, so when you're talking about the price on the entire everything of everything went up by that much, yeah, I can see this them just basically saying, look, until all of this shakes out, we don't know what the price of anything is, and we got to shut all these projects down that are not surefire must have things. And I think that's what's going to happen extremely quickly across the board, whether you're big or small.
When you start looking at it too, there's a lack of electricity that's needed for these things. And also, actually talked to someone at Microsoft last week who said that the stuff for AI is going to have to start out decentralized first. So on each machine, and then it'll move to data centers later. So I think maybe they're getting ahead of themselves, but no doubt the input of chips and servers and things like that to run these data centers is impacted by tariffs. So I think a lot of things. And yeah, you know, when you go back to thinking about building a toaster, one, is that something that businesses in this country want to do? And two, once it can be done by AI and robotics, is that something that is going to just take away those jobs and wipe those out in 4 or 5 years anyway? So I think there's like a lot of questions here, and I think the market certainly is having a hard time digesting all of that. But yeah, those are some of my thoughts based on what we've talked about so far. Bitcoin for precedence. Did you want to add something?
Yeah, I was, I was going to talk about the bonds and the stocks, because that's, kind of my game. To simplify though, when stocks sell off, the bonds are being bought. So the bond market's way bigger than the stock market, and the yield on the bond goes down when bonds are being bought. So it's really hard for my dyslexic brain to kind of, I don't know, get this right in my head, but basically bonds are confusing because when people say they're going up or they're being bought, it means two different things. The yield goes up when they sell the bonds, and the yield goes down.
Yeah, that means someone's dumping like... That means someone's dumping. Someone is dumping.
It's China.
Right,
it's China for sure. China is dumping.
So I was on board with Coleman. Yeah, I was on board with Coleman, and I thought the whole game was, you know, who cares? Stock market gets murdered for a little bit and then bonds go down. We refinance and then the flood of cash comes from the Fed. You know, they lower rates and everything's jovial again, but I don't think it's working. And I think the whole thing is to control the masses in the mind, control the mind of the masses and not let them see this currency war that is just blowing up in everyone's face. Cause it might all be smoke and mirrors and it might, you know, China might be playing nice in the underground and this is all just a, you know, charades. But if things are getting bad on the geopolitical, game or the game board and they start using different currencies, this is not good for the US dollar. And I mean, it's good for Bitcoin, but Americans will suffer. That's the only sad part. But that's all I was, the market and the bonds is all I was, I had a 15 second delay when I got up here. So that's how I, the touch, sorry.
Hey, you're good. Thanks for bringing that up. Yomar, I'm going to throw it up to you. It looks like you have your hand up.
I forgot what I was going to say. So
mind of a goldfish. I think yep,
I
it's
saw something shiny. So
there have to be buyers on the other side of these treasury bonds. And so, the big question is how much can be dumped and how fast and who's buying, right? So I think you might have US buyers. You might have others around the world hedging with, you know, moving into cash. Does that suck from equities? So I do wonder, like, as the 10-year yield drives up, like, who's the buyer on the other side? And, I think those things will come out, but, no doubt there is beginning to be some dysfunction in the market, especially if the volumes are high enough. If there's no buyers on the other side of those treasury bonds, that puts pressure on the large banks who are the, you know, authorized dealers of treasury bonds. And so is this maybe something, and I'm not trying to speculate too much here, but is this where the Fed would have to come in and buy those bonds, especially since the U.S. government needs to continue to issue bonds to fund the government and refinance this debt that we've been talking about for months on end?
Well, you bring up an interesting point, Bob, because it was last week or the week before we talked about it on this show where the Fed was considering starting a new program where they're going to bail out these hedge funds because they were underwater on some of their positions. And so that was just speculation weeks ago. But now looking at how everything's going, it's kind of alarming to see that was kind of known, you know, 1 or 2 weeks ago. So I think you're right. I think they're going to have to step in. And I don't follow treasury market auctions whatsoever unless James Lavish or somebody posts something. But I do think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to today's, bond sale and the price or the response or the demand for that one is going to be very significant. But Petro, you have your hand up, sir.
Yeah, I can't discount that Trump just launched a stable coin. And I also cannot discount that it would be a mighty, mighty, like, amazing trade if you got everybody to think that China was pissed at you. But China was actually doing you the favor of selling you the treasury bills you needed to create all the stable coins you wanted to expand the dollar system and crush the dollar price.
There's a lot of oddities going on. And I do think, because again, there's so much.
Hang on. Something just dawned on me. Holy crap. And you dethrone the banks. Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one thing to pay attention to as well, because if you look at it, I don't know if anybody saw it, but Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, came out this morning and was talking to a group of community banks and other bankers and was really highlighting the intent of the Trump administration and the Treasury Department to play a more active role in deregulation for these banks. And so he mentioned a lot of different things, but It seems, whether it's smoke and mirrors or not, it seems that they do want to drive innovation with the community banks. And I think they see that, stable coins actually would be a huge, would create a lot of trouble for community banks because you could consider where.
No. It's not community banks. It just clicked in my head. It's not community banks. This goes back to freaking Jefferson. Dude, like when we lost the ability to have the government independent from the banking system, we effectively gave up a separation of church and state level, like, importance thing there. You hear a couple guys that have gone into history pretty deep, you know, that, like, if you've read, Tragedy and Hope, and any of those deep historic tombs, you realize that the dollar system, really was lost to the European hegemony and then regained later on. It was actually the Nixon 1971 deal that actually gave the old like patriarchal families of Europe banks, like the Medici old banks money back power, right? And so when you have I guess you would call those people, you know, old money. And old money has had their vested interest vested for so long in American policy that they're not going to just give that up. You know, they've had it since the 1700s, lost it for a bit. They'll get it right back. And they do that through the banking system, right? So what happens for the next 30, 40, 50 years? Banks dominate politicians. And they dominate regulation and they dominate government. And all of a sudden everybody's towing the line to the banks. And the only way to really do away with that is to ditch the banking system altogether by saying banks are irrelevant. Because if the federal government can say, hey, buy our treasury bills and create private money, the way private money used to be minted way back in the day, then you just let the private money find equal market value, right? You let it float in the fair market. And yeah, it might drop in value, but the system, if it's decentralized, and I think this is the current administration sees and understands this fact. If you achieve decentralization, then in fact, you don't need the bank. Because you don't need a brick and mortar bank in order to hold US dollars anymore. We have now got the technology to, and I have used this in the freaking middle of nowhere, guys, between Colombia and Venezuela and in the foot of the Andes Mountains with barely any internet. This shit works. I can give somebody that will never see a brick and mortar bank the ability to transact and save in US dollars. And so with that as a reality, right? Like that's no longer, we can't unsee that. Well, what the hell do you need a bank for?
Yeah. I mean, I don't, disagree with everything you said. There's a lot of things that are true there. I think the points of, you know, cutting out the middlemen, you don't need the banks. But what I'll say is, like, banks are, they're not a monolith, right? There's different size financial institutions. So you have community banks, you have the mid-tier regional banks, and then you have the big banks. I think when you begin to look at it and then see what Scott Bessent said this morning, it was really focused on the community banks and driving programs for innovation so that these guys can survive. They're going to need tools in order to adopt stable coins. And I would say to a lesser extent that, you know, what Larry Fink said last week and we talked about, which is the tokenization of private debt so that they can compete. Because if they don't have deposits and people start pulling them, And you can just go direct. The big issue is with no capital base, you can't fractional reserve bank and you can't lend to the people in your community. So I think it's not like a on or off switch. I think it's the big question is like, do they actually realize, what's going on with stablecoin?
I disagree. I think it is an on and off switch. I think these guys are fully understanding that Hal Finney saw the private bank rise and that if Bitcoiners got their shit together, that anybody that held half a Bitcoin or more will become a private bank for their family. And your kids will not be going to Chase and Wells Fargo for their mortgage. They'll be coming to you and you will be able to charge them a fair price of purchasing power for their money whilst protecting them because you're a parent. So I think that's where we're heading because the reality is if we have this break from the dollar hegemony system, and if the dollar system doesn't break because it's still too strong, right? All you get is everybody printing money just because currency needs to be expanded. Right now, that's really the main problem in the dollar is that the dollar needs to be expanded at an absurd pace. And that absurd pace punishes the crap out of every American if they don't have Bitcoin. But if they have Bitcoin and if they have Bit bonds and if they have the US dollar now somehow being, let's not say the US dollar, the US dollar system somehow being backed or underlied by Bitcoin-esque technologies, dude, that old money, that old capital for fractional reserve can vanish and it doesn't hurt anything.
This is a lot over my head, but this is kind of my thought on this, and then I want to take a pause and thank our partners. I don't think that you're necessarily right, BitPetro, on everything. I don't think that's the end game. I do think, though, that they're pushing this stablecoin axe through because I think they can see that there's waning demand for people buying our US debt and we're kind of in an issue. And so if we can get these stablecoin issuers to be forced, if they want to go ahead and issue a stablecoin in the United States, to be forced to buy our debt at an artificially suppressed price, we can kind of continue this game. And so I think that's a little bit more of the way that they're trying to play this. Again, I could be wrong, but I don't necessarily think the banks are going to go away.
Yeah, but why play the Bitbond game? If what you're saying is true, why would Forbes be putting out Bitbond articles?
Because that makes the most sense if you want to sell your debt to different countries. You can't have everything internal, right? Because then it's just a house of cards, even more so. So the Bitbonds, I think, is an ultimate play to go ahead and export your debt. And that would be the only way you could have demand. But in the short term, I think having stablecoins purchase it would offset some of that. But really quick, I do want to give a quick thank you to our partners. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Use our code BTCVETS for 5% off your order. Pay with Bitcoin, get additional 10% off. Solosatoshi.com. Punchplate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate, punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. Scott Wiley will be hosting a seminar at the Bitcoin Alaska Conference on July 1st. The conference dates are July 5th and 6th, so if you get there early, you can register to sign up for Scott Wiley's course. You can get more information at bitcoinalaska.org. And Bitcoin Alaska is a family-friendly conference, so bring your spouse, bring your kids. Make a great trip out of it, bitcoinalaska.org. Fountain app. Send money to your favorite artists, your favorite podcasters, and even get paid for leaving comments and reviews. Check them out at fountain.fm. And secure your Bitcoin. Yeah, I know the price is tanking right now or going down, but secure your Bitcoin like it's 10 times what it's worth today. Get yourself a cold card. hardware wallet, the most secure hardware wallet out there. Use our link up in the nest. We'll be able to start offering a unique discount code to everyone once you get a few more orders in there. Use the link up in the nest. Get yourself a hardware wallet from Cold Card.
Coleman, if I may, are you done with the sponsors?
It's all you, Bob.
Awesome. Yeah, I just wanted to also say, like, back to BitPetro, I think what you're talking about is an inevitability, to be honest. I'm just not sure the time frame. I don't think it happens during this administration. I don't think that they're going to be able to completely derail the dollar and bring in all these stable coins and Bitcoin. They just create way too much chaos. And if history's any guide, you know, we've seen when things get too disorderly, then you have wars, you have civil unrest, you have all kinds of problems in society. I know they're not going to let it get that far. And we've seen in the past, I mean, this is why when something breaks because of all of this, then the Fed will print. I think that's the base case we should all have. Now, the details of how this all shakes out in the short term, like, is anybody's guess. But something is bound to break, whether it's from the bond market, which I'd love to hear from Robert on, or, you know, something else in the system. We've heard of cracks, you know, with the commercial loans for the banks. We've seen, you know, issues arise with financial institutions in Europe. Switzerland's already gone negative for deposit rates. And so I think, you know, you really have to see, like, are any of these cracks going to splinter and eventually create some sort of what the banking system, you know, what the Fed and other central banks see as a big event, like a crisis, right? And then what do they do in response? And I think we know the answer, but I'll pause there and maybe give BitPetro some ability to respond, and if you don't want to, that's fine, but would love to hear from Robert as well.
No, man, look, I think, you know, this is me trying to, you guys are hearing my thoughts live. I don't have, like, this, you know, written out analysis. That just hit me as we were talking about it, that, oh crap, you know, the banking system of old could be dethroned by this. And I hadn't even conceived that this is one of the things that I do like about Trump, is that he studies the art of war the same way that he wrote The Art of the Deal. If you've read that book, for him, deception is a big deal. It's part of his persona, is that he wants power through narrative control. And if he can shake things up and then be perceived to be breaking things whilst giving himself some other backdoor lever, that feels to me that, like, the way that he's going to get things done. He's not going to threaten everybody with the, you know, nuclear button. That's not his style. I think that the tariff thing certainly seems erratic. But I happen to think that erratic is part of the recipe of what we're seeing, that in order to shake out the banks, you had to have creative destruction.
BitPetro, I agree with your thesis. It's pretty out there, but the Federal Reserve is not part of our government, and it is the central attack point. So if he's going to war against the Federal Reserve, it would be epic and total deceitful and beautiful at the same time, because there are owners who own the Federal Reserve that nobody knows who they are. They're just entities upon entities and subgroups and families.
That is what I'm talking about. That is 1,000% what I'm talking about, right? Yep. There. It's that group, that cabal.
is who is.
So I think you're spot on, but it'll get real ugly if that's going on under the, like the underbelly. And Trump is smart enough to pull that, lever and not let the masses know about it, because it will be a war. And
which
a
is
war
why
in the background.
I said the name, which is why I said the name Soros, because that's the only dude that has that kind of cojones to say, all right, here's a big giant bell. Let's ring the shit out of it.
I'm not sure, gentlemen, who had their hand up first, Robert or Wade. I'll let you be a gentleman and choose who goes first. Just a friendly reminder, though, we do have the chat box down in the bottom right. If anyone would like to ask us a question, feel free to do so. If you want to come up here on stage and contribute or ask questions, you're more than welcome to. Just two simple rules for everybody. Please, no shit coining. I don't want to hear about it. And unless you have questions on why Bitcoin's superior to shitcoins, then that's fine. I'll be more than happy to talk about that. But be gentlemen. Don't talk over each other. Allow someone to go ahead and answer the question or make their point. And then when there's a pause, go ahead and feel free to jump in. But Robert or Wade?
There's a timing and schedule issue here too, as well, guys. I just want to like go back to during the transition from the Biden to the Trump administration, and Scott Bessent goes in and he has Janet Yellen over at Treasury crack the books open for him, and he realizes, holy shit, there's $10 trillion I have to roll over in June of this year. This is the first week I've heard anyone even bring it up or talk about it in financial spaces. And with the current environment, the tariff monkey wrench, and all of the chaos that's going on here, it has to be viewed in the context of the guidance that Scott Bessent is giving to the administration on how are we going to roll and issue somewhere between $9 and $12 trillion in debt here, and at what rate are they going to be able to do it at, and what instruments and what levers do they have the ability in Treasury to pull to do this debt rollover, this debt reissuance. And it's going to be, I just see that as a major catalyst in June regarding all of the ongoing negotiations. And I'm just wondering if the administration is trying to shoehorn all of this all at once, either in June or before June, and have all of this done. So I was interested to see what the panel's thoughts were regarding the debt rollover in the context of, you know, the tariff war.
Robert or Salmon?
Yeah, so here's the thing. I agree that there is a concern about the, almost $10 trillion in debt that needs to be refinanced. I agree that that's a concern. I would say that lower rates are kind of like, the being able to refi the debt at lower rates, I think, is a happy kind of accident, though. I don't think they're trying to crash the equity market to get rates lower. And what I think is really the thing to key in here, I put it in the nest, but back in early March, I sent a tweet to Luke Groman. Here, I'll put the Federal Reserve on. So what I had noticed was this correlation between the trade balance on a balance of payments basis, and the Federal Reserve balance sheet, at current account plus the Federal Reserve balance sheet. So what that shows is the degree to which the Federal Reserve balance sheet is overpowering a current account deficit, basically. The degree to which the Federal Reserve is stepping in. And it gets like very complicated. I won't get into like all the details. But essentially what happens in emerging markets is what's called a balance of payments crisis. And I'll put that one here. There. So that one's in there. It's a very simple, I tried to make it simple English, so hopefully everyone can read that and understand. But there's a number of characteristics in a balance of payments crisis. This is common with emerging markets. I've always kind of said, you know, the U.S. is much more like an emerging market than we'd like to believe. And the characteristics are widening of the current account deficit, which we know that's the main component of the current account deficit is the trade balance, you know, the balance of trade. We know that that blew out in January. A decline in foreign exchange reserves. So, right, that's foreign central banks that hold dollars and dollar denominated assets. We know that that's been declining since at least the mid 2010s. And certainly has accelerated, right? The news overnight, China, is instructing its state-owned banks to reduce dollar holdings. So that is accelerating. Currency depreciation, a sharp decline in the value of the dollar. We know the dollar has been devalued in real terms by 60-65% over the past 18 months. If you look at gold, the gold US dollar price, that is up like 60-65% in the past 18 months. So I would call that a sharp depreciation. Sharp increase in debt and interest expense. We've been over that many times. We all kind of know that story. That's certainly there. Capital flight. There's another thing that Bob and I have spoken about for at least 2-4 months. And it's kind of accelerating, right? Where foreign capital that has been in dollar-based assets starts to sell those assets to rotate out of dollar-based assets, rotate into and what we've been seeing over the past few days is the safe havens, right, that used to be the dollar. The safe havens are not the dollar anymore. In fact, the dollar is like toxic. It's radioactive. No one wants it. So what do they want? Well, they want this, according to what the markets are saying, they want the Swiss franc, which is historically one of the only currencies that actually strengthens versus the dollar, that actually holds up versus the dollar. The Swiss franc and the yen. The Japanese yen, those are acting as the safe haven trades. Final characteristic, this is super important, is the rising interest rates. So the bond market, the sovereign bonds of a country experiencing a balance of payments crisis. And I've said this for maybe a year, that in the next recession and the next growth scare, we would not see rates come down. We would not see people buy bonds, which is historically what has always happened. In fact, we would see yields go higher. We would see people selling bonds and shorting bonds, right? And yields would therefore move higher. And over the past 3 days, remember, this is the highest tariffs in over 100 years that the world has ever seen. In 100 years, this is the largest negative growth shock. Economic in the aggregate economic sense, this is the worst negative growth shock to the global economy since COVID, since a brand new novel virus was causing a worldwide pandemic. And we're seeing rates not move lower. We're not seeing people buy bonds, which is what should be happening. In fact, we're seeing the opposite. Not only are we seeing the opposite, we're seeing like insane moves higher in the 10-year. So, this is something that, like I said, any listeners to the great Bitcoin veteran space, when I made that balance of payments post, I came in and I kind of warned everyone about it. It is playing out. I'm sure you'll probably hear more kind of discussion about this, but the 10-year has moved at the peak overnight, in Europe session. At its peak in the past 3 days, the 10-year made a 61 basis point move higher. This is breaking. This is collapse. This is like, I should say collapse. This is, losing the long end of the curve. This is kind of what we as Bitcoiners know was kind of always going to happen. A lot of people have talked about it is happening. So the long end of the yield curve is just puking, meaning rates higher. And there is a point at which kind of to the thing that started all of this for me, there's a point at which the Federal Reserve must step in. I don't know what that point is.
You'll probably get your answer with that, Robert, today, because there's a 10-year auction for roughly $40 billion, at 1 o'clock.
Yep. So. And yesterday there was a pretty big 3-year auction, and we saw is a $58 billion 3-year auction, $58 billion with a B. And we saw the third largest tail in the history of the 3-year auction, the third largest tail. What the tail refers to is it's a Dutch auction. So basically, if they're offering $58 billion of U.S. treasuries, whatever rate, people put in bids, right? Say, oh, I'll buy $10 billion at 3. And another guy says, I'll buy $50 billion at 3.10, right? But until the entire $58 billion is absorbed by the market, whatever rate is necessary to get the entire supply bought up, right? So if it, maybe people don't have a bid, maybe there's a huge gap, right? And the next highest bid is 4. Well, what that means is that everyone gets 4, right? Like every single person in that auction gets the rate that was necessary to eat up the entire supply. That's called the tail. So the difference between what it took, you know, the rate at which it took to eat up the entire bond supply, and what the bond was trading at, you know, at the time of, you know, in the free market, quote unquote, before the auction, that difference is called the tail. And so what a big tail represents is horrible demand, right? Because if people wanted to hold U.S. treasuries, right, you wouldn't need to move so much higher, from the current, you know, free market price. You wouldn't have to go way higher to eat up the supply of bonds, right? You know, most of it would be issued right there, you know, because there's demand. But what the third largest tail in history indicates is that the foreign demand for bonds is just plummeting. And so we're seeing this capital rotation story where bonds, equities, and the dollar are all moving lower in tandem. This is hallmark capital flight, hallmark balance of payments crisis. This is full-blown emerging market behavior. I'm sorry, you know, if that offends people, but it just is, objectively. And so, yeah, there's a 10-year auction for $39 billion today. And then there's a $30 billion auction on the 10th, so tomorrow. And so, yeah, the MOVE Index is a measure of the volatility of the treasury market. And basically, the creator of the index said anything over 130 is serious dysfunction. Think of it like a VIX for the bond market.
Yeah. Hey, Robert, I'll just say we have a lot of new people in the space. Wanted to welcome everybody. Take a little break here and just encourage people, follow the Bitcoin Veterans handle here on X. And if you can, share the space. If you have questions for any of the speakers, please use that chat box in the right corner below. And we do this each weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern. Feel free to join us anytime. If you want to speak or ask some questions, hit that mic button to request to come up on the stage. Wanted to shift it a little bit over to, oh, we lost Simon. Okay, BitPetro, did you want to kick in or respond to what Robert had?
I'm not hearing BitPetro.
Can I just real quick finish?
Hey, Coleman, I had a quick question.
The MOVE Index is 139 as of yesterday and 179 as of current, you know, right now.
Yeah, so that's the bond market is like, though, right? The 179 is the live price. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so literally right now, like the bond market is blowing up, like right this second. So this is like, I think the thing to watch over the next couple days, couple weeks.
Hey, Wade, you said you had a question, sir?
Yeah, I was just taking a look at some of the government 401k PSP fund options. Those are all BlackRock managed. And I was shocked because coming into the week, I was like, oh, I'm going to go into the bond fund. And I go and I look at the bond fund and the bond fund is down 2%. And, you know, conventional wisdom was like, oh man, like flight to safety and whatnot. And I was just wondering kind of what Infra's thoughts were, what Rob's thoughts were on, hey, for like folks who literally have funds that are trapped in these government 401k, you know, BlackRock managed funds. I mean, what are these guys supposed to do with this? There's nothing to do.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I, for my parents or my grandparents who I do worry about, right? I don't have enough to be concerned with, you know, as a younger millennial, but you know, for my parents, like what I've been saying is that, you know, U.S. treasuries, especially long-term U.S. treasuries, must be, like, they are one of the worst investments right now. So short-term treasuries are a much less bad investment, right? So if you can find, like, a two-year bond fund or a treasury bill fund, right, where it's more of a money market fund type allocation, something like that is much better than long-term treasuries. But I would also say, you know, if GLD or some kind of Bitcoin and gold exposure is possible, what I was trying to say is like we are seeing the moment that we've all talked about, the moment that we've all kind of predicted, we are seeing that like today, Like it is happening currently. So yeah, so gold, Bitcoin, short-term treasuries are probably, or cash, you know, I mean, I know that's not for 401k.
Well, that's what they refer to as short-term treasuries, right? Is they call it a cash position just because you're not locked in. But I think you're going to see more people flow into gold and Bitcoin simply because there's not a huge control over it. And then we know that Bitcoin's the freest money. So that's what we advocate everyone for. Simon, I'm glad that you're able to jump back up here. I'm going to throw it over to you, sir.
Okay. Hey guys. So the way that I see this is some would say a bit more conspiratorial, but actually I just follow monetary flows rather than listen to politicians. So most people kind of take PR and what politicians say and think that that's what they're doing. But what I do is I follow monetary flows and recognize almost all the time the money, is doing the opposite of what they're saying. And so some people think that, and that you can do an if-then scenario to figure this one out. So Robert's, belief that we're going to a Triffin dilemma, you know, monetary reorganization. If they do that, then you know that the Trump administration is, because, you know, that is how to get back to a more realistic, but either way, it's capital outflows. Because this is kind of, if they're fixing the system, then, you know, you're coming off a multi-decade corporate raiding Ponzi scheme. And then at the bottom of it, you have to fix the money. And then fixing the money involves actually some kind of transition to, you know, hard money. I personally believe an end to the fractional reserve system and an end to the Fed. Personally, I have zero faith that that's what they're doing. But if they are doing that, then I'll be the first person to say, Robert's got the solution, but I don't believe that the politicians are doing it. So that's what I'd say. The second thing, what do I think they're actually doing? So just like Trump was there to be a vaccine salesperson for Big Pharma,
I think we lost Simon there. Yeah.
Epic timing.
Yeah, let's give him a second to reconnect. Yomar, what do you got?
I was double muted. I thought it was just me that lost Simon there.
Simon, are you back with us? All right, let's go to BitPetro was up next. Cool. Maybe we can get Simon back.
Hey, BitPetro, before I go over to you, I had a listener question come through in the channel, so I want to address that really quick because we told them to ask questions in there. I think we all know the answer to it, but I'm going to throw it to the panel. He wanted to know, the Bitcoin accountant, thoughts on selling our gold to buy Bitcoin. China is probably dumping our treasuries, which I think we're all in consensus they are, and they are buying gold. Seems like a strategic move that could give the upper hand because they're clearly unfazed by the tariffs. Anybody have any thoughts on that or want to address the question?
I have some gold myself. I got one coin, but all of my money's in Bitcoin. So I have a little gold. I think it's smart if you have more gold than Bitcoin to definitely start scaling out and moving your majority to Bitcoin. But to have a little gold is nice, just to have it to hold in your hand, you know, you need to bribe the border guards or, I don't know, some weird reason.
Well, I think he was talking about the United States as a nation selling gold to buy Bitcoin.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, I thought he gold's always
at the individual level. At the individual level, I'm on, you know, with Bitcoin for Presidents, like, you know, if you have a little bit, that's fine. But like my main allocation right now is Bitcoin. I have other stuff. You know, I think there's some health in diversity just because I don't know, you know, what the future holds. So short term, I like to have some things that I can shed. So I don't have to shed any Bitcoin. You know, I don't know if gold is the right thing there or not, but, you know, I would say gold is probably my second favorite asset. And then, you know, everything else. So take that for what you will. At the nation state level, no, the US should not sell gold for Bitcoin because we can just print money to buy Bitcoin. So,
wouldn't selling the gold though devalue it, and so kind of hurt China in the process? I think that's that was an argument somebody was making. Maybe Saylor.
So. The relative value trade or the demonetization of gold trade, like the if we're talking about like what will happen or like the future, right? We kind of know, what's happened already. It's pretty clear that the U.S. is starting to behave like an emerging market in a balance of payments crisis. The bond market's puking. We kind of know all that. Like what is the next, how does this, where does this go from here? I firmly believe that that trade wars lead to currency wars. This is what history shows. And I firmly believe we've already started seeing, the early stages of a currency war. So how will that play out? Both China and the U.S. need, really every developed country, right? Like pretty much every developed country needs to devalue their fiat currency versus scarce assets. So what I believe it will happen over, I don't know. It could be very soon. It could be within a couple weeks. It could be within a couple months. I'm really not sure, but I am increasingly confident of a Mar-a-Lago accord. I've been, screaming this from the rooftop since like September of last year, but I think it is the only way that this plays out. So how does a Mar-a-Lago accord look? No one really knows. My guess is that all fiat currencies will be devalued versus gold, number one. So gold, we're talking like, gold's at what, I don't know, 3,100 or 3,000. We're talking like double that. US dollar gold price could be 6,000. And they will use, different fiats, right? In order to address the issue, which is the yuan is undervalued, right? Cause they've manipulated it lower, intervened in the currency markets. In order to address that issue, certain fiats will be devalued versus all fiats will be devalued versus gold. Some will be devalued more than others, right? And that's how you adjust the intra fiat price, currency cross is some fiats are devalued, say 50% versus gold. So gold goes up in that currency by 50%. And other currencies, it'll be devalued, 20%. And so by doing that, you're effectively managing or changing or reorienting the exchange rate between currency A and currency B, but they all need to be devalued versus gold. So I think, and Bitcoin, of course, too, Bitcoin is objectively a better version of gold. We all kind of know this, So I think gold and Bitcoin will both be, in US dollar terms, since we're mostly US people, both Bitcoin and gold will do very, very well over the next, call it 5 years. Some currencies will just be devalued more, but everything has to be devalued versus gold and Bitcoin, if that makes sense. Hopefully that makes sense.
You often say Mar-a-Lago Accord, but I don't think a lot of people know what that is. Just to put that out there.
Yeah. Yeah, so we see these kind of monetary reorderings every, call it 50, 60, 70, 80 years, a long human lifetime. And it aligns with the work that Neil Howe has done with the turnings, right? The fourth turning in that time period, right? Every 70, 80-ish years, there's this huge fundamental change in the global monetary order. And Bessent, you can find his speech on YouTube that he gave to the Manhattan Institute before he was in the running for Treasury Secretary, right? This was before that. And he spoke three times about a global monetary reordering. And he said something along the lines of like, there will be a global monetary reordering and I want to be part of it. Something like that. You go back in history, Bretton Woods, Plaza Accord. Plaza Accord was mainly like an Asian currency, story. But basically it's where, all the kind of powerful countries get together and they go, look, the current kind of monetary system we have is not working. Your currency is too weak versus ours and your currency is too strong versus theirs, right? And they all get together and they kind of, decide what certain fiat, what the correct quote unquote fiat value of each currency will be. I believe, you know, the U.S. has pretty significant leverage here, but I would also say that, you know, it's not 100%. China has, as we've seen with the bond yields, we know how, you know, it's always been a concern. Well, what if they start dumping treasuries?
Do we have any evidence of that though? Or is that just hearsay?
I've been
reading a lot about hedge funds having to unwind because they're having
to cover
various positions and stuff.
Yeah, the basis trade unwind. I think it's equal parts, right? It's partly the basis trade unwind. It's partly foreign holders dumping. You can see this by, I'll put it in the nest, so people can visualize. But when the dollar is falling, when the dollar is going down and the bond yield is going up, meaning the bond value is going down, you can see over the past, call it day and a half, there have been four big, periods of time where the dollar gets sold really hard and the bonds are getting sold really hard. So someone is selling bonds. We won't know for another month or two when the quarterly treasury data, tick data comes out. We won't know for sure if it was foreigners, but like you got to believe China, right? You have to mix it in the bigger picture.
It says China
came out.
$800 billion.
China came out.
Is that
out
enough to move the market that much?
Oh, $800 billion is a lot. But that's not the complete holdings. That's just, I think, for the 10-year. So China came out yesterday and they said, hey, we're going to devalue our currency by, they start indicating we're going to devalue our currency by like 15 to 30%. That's a big move in a currency, that's what we saw during COVID, right? Think of it that way. Americans saw about a 30% devaluation in their currency. We know that's a significant amount. And why they're doing that is to offset the cost of the tariffs, is to help kind of soften the blow. So they are already kind of indicating, hey, state controlled Chinese banks, no more dollar, right? Like, you are not, and they're basically government banks, let's be honest, saying no more dollar, right? So the currency war era has already started, at least with China, right? Canada mentioned, we talked about in the space a couple of weeks ago, Canada, some politician in Canada made the point, hey, we own a lot of treasuries. So we won't know exactly who it is, but I think you got to mix it with the big picture, right? Like all the other data points. And it starts to paint a very, in my opinion, once you start to kind of take the 30,000 foot view, it paints a pretty clear picture, in my opinion.
Pip Petro, are you still with us? I see your hand is up. I'm going to take that as a no. Thank you, gentlemen. So we are getting to the top of the hour, but the conversation is still rolling. So I'm going to let you, if you all want to continue with it, please feel free to keep going if anyone has any comments or anything.
Yeah, I would just say, look, like this is what Bitcoiners have been talking about, right? Like it's happening.
Yeah, I just want to say, to me, this all feels like just a sort of covert war against China. And I feel like a lot of the other tariffs were sort of cover for this whole procedure. I think Trump really hates China. I think he thinks they caused COVID. I think he thinks they're bad for the world. I think they're fencing out that they have a weakness right now. You see their economy's not doing well. I mean, I've talked to people that know, you know, were there and stuff, and they're like, it's pretty bad. And I think they're just trying to, like, turn the screws in and just really hurt them. And apparently, from what I know, you know, apparently the world, like a lot of other countries don't like China. They steal the jobs, they steal their intellectual property. And I think that's what this is. And I think that Trump and the administration is going to put us through some pain to hurt them. But I think hopefully they have a plan I think we'll come out of this ahead with more jobs, more manufacturing, more deregulation, tax cuts. Hopefully, I think we'll get out of this. But yeah, I think it's going to be a little tough. Prepare. Sorry. That's my feeling. I don't know. Doesn't it feel like they just really don't like China? Because the one reason I think about this is when they're wargaming this out, of course China's going to be the one that says, we're going to retaliate, right? Like they're going to retaliate until their country is collapsing. Like that's just the archetype. That's the modus operandi of the Chinese government. Well,
but let me just say one thing. I think I don't think we give China enough credit, though, on what their willingness or the amount of pain that they're.
No, I'm giving them credit. I'm giving them credit. They'll do it till the bitter end. Like that's how they are. That's a culture. Like, I mean, not is it? I don't know if that's credit because it's kind of it's sort of a negative, right? Like you should try to optimize for your well-being, but there's so much pride with like you have to save the save face. That's culture. So my thought is when they're wargaming this out, when they were sitting in the room, they're like, well, Japan will give in, they'll give in. Perhaps I think that Japan, a lot of these countries are in on this. I don't think they like China. I think they all hate China. I don't know, but maybe in on it's too strong, but when they're wargaming it out, they have to know that China's going to do this till the very end, even if their country starts to implode, because pride over everything, right? What they call it, the century of humiliation. I think this is all about China, and I don't think that in the end Trump will mind if their shoes are made in Vietnam, but I think they want to force a lot of the industry out of China. Definitely some here. For like,
yeah, the Vietnam story is not about Vietnam. It's about China and transshipment.
Yeah, bingo. This whole thing is China. That's it. China, China, China. And they did cause COVID. And you know, they do steal our shit. You know, I'm fucking sick of it.
Quick question. Did you, I missed a bunch of what just happened in the last like 30 minutes. I was on a phone call. Did Simon come in here and make any comments or what was his
take? He did come in.
What was his take?
To be honest with you, we've had such a wide variety. I can't remember exactly what Simon's specific points were.
Not to push people over to his space, but he did set up a different space because he kept getting booted for some reason. We weren't doing that. I think he was just having connection issues. But he was talking a little bit more about how he was approaching it from a little bit more conspiratorial, approach. And,
really?
No way. Yeah, it's maybe his MO. But you know, the big point was capital flows. He's watching the overall capital flows and. Go ahead, Astrid.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm hyped. I want to ask, because Robert, you're into this stuff. I just read about it a little bit, but when they devalued back in 2015, I was reading a story, there was these crazy capital outflows. I mean, yep. So if they devalue 30, aren't you going to see that again? Aren't you going to see capital flow just fly out? Isn't that dangerous for them? Like what are the repercussions? Of course.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. And nothing is without consequence. So if they devalue the yuan by say 30%, they are already worried about capital outflows. And so it is not without risk for them. And I think, you know, getting back to the earlier point of like, well, what do people do? Think about it, right? If you're a Chinese billionaire, where do you, if you don't want to hold the yuan or yuan denominated government debt, which is yielding like, I don't know, 1.2%. If you don't want to hold that, what do you want to hold? Gold, Bitcoin, right? Like non-confiscatable. You can take it over borders.
30-year treasuries.
Yeah, not U.S. treasuries, right? In a capital war. So. So look, like that, if there will be capital flight and it will flow to neutral, non-confiscatable assets like gold and Bitcoin.
Yeah, and like I just want to put this out there. If this is really a war in China, I wouldn't be surprised if the United States government doesn't start to flood the market with gold. Like, I'm not saying that's a high probability, but
yeah, look,
I wouldn't be surprised if we see that soon just to fuck China because that's what they're trying to do, and that would be insane.
Yeah,
but this whole thing is insane. Everything's insane.
What Simon? Yeah, I agree that it's hard even for someone like me that's like, you know, feels like all this stuff makes sense or clicks in my brain. Even for like this is insane. It's just literally insane. What I can't keep up. I would say that to Simon's point, like I try to not get into motives, right? And like what are people thinking? And like what seems to work for my brain and the way just I operate is just what the market is saying, right? What is the market doing? And from there, you like the price is the signal, right? The price of a bond yield, the price of the dollar, the price of the S&P or Bitcoin or gold or whatever, right? Like it doesn't lie. The market doesn't lie. It sends signals through price. Price is information. So what is the market indicating? Well, it's indicating the U.S. is in a balance of payments crisis, like an emerging market, you know, and capital is fleeing U.S. dollar denominated assets. There is no, in my, I love Simon, but in my opinion, there's no need to like try to kind of, you know, dig deeper and find a hidden, like, you just look at the price. Just look at the price. Look at the price of a 10-year. Look at the price of the S&P, you know, go down the list, currencies, right? Just look at the prices of what is the market indicating. And from there, it becomes very clear what's going on. Now, when it comes to the motives, you know, what is in their head and like all that kind of stuff, in my opinion, this is not to knock people that are good at that stuff, because it is important. But in my opinion, it's much less important why people are doing something or what they're thinking compared to what is actually happening. And what is that information to indicate in terms of where are we headed? Where are we headed? You know, you can try to guess their state of mind, right? You can try to kind of infer stuff, but like the quantitative black and white objective data, that we get from global capital markets, that is so much more signal, in my opinion. Versus trying to kind of get in people's heads and, you know, kind of all that kind of stuff. Just in my opinion.
If there's a coordinated dumping of U.S. treasuries, what's to prevent us from either freezing them or just buying them back?
So buying them back, right? This gets into QE infinity kind of thing, right? What Bitcoiners have talked about for a long time. I think that second option is much more likely. The first option, you know, is basically capital controls, right? And I've been on the train of like, you know, yeah, the U.S. has rarely had capital controls, and we've been generally pretty free, in terms of capital. But I've always believed that capital, controls will, at, you know, maybe not to the degree that China, right? Like, it might not be that severe, but I do believe that some degree of capital controls is coming. But I think that kind of it'll be mild, right? It won't be like a full blown CCP level capital control. It'll much more likely be the second option, right? Like the Fed just prints the money and buys it. I think that's where this is headed.
But we already seized $300 billion of Russian assets. What's to prevent us from seizing billions of dollars or trillions of dollars of Chinese communist assets? I mean, what, can't we just say it's a national security thing? Same way?
That's a great point. Look, it's certainly possible. At this point, I would take nothing off the table, right? Like, we are entering totally uncharted waters. This is...
I got to ask a question, though, because if this is a balance of payments problem, then that balance of payments problem occurs globally now. It's not a emerging market problem. It's a every single country in the world has a debt, an unsustainable debt gun to their head. And so without a reset, right, then they're left with war as option A or something else as option B.
Mar-a-Lago Accord.
Right, like some Mar-a-Lago Accord, right? So like I happen to think that, you know, there's what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? So if these guys have figured out Bitcoin's the answer, Bitbonds is the answer, the sovereign safe assets are the answer, then it seems to me that China's not like foolish to this. They obviously freaking have the mining like manufacturing there. So it wouldn't really seem to me, and they seem to be very friendly to Bitcoin as far as ownership. I haven't really ever heard of Chinese really crack down on Bitcoiners in China per se holding and hodling. It's just not something that's not a rhetoric that I've ever really heard. So at the end of the day, if what we're talking about is that the currencies are going to get slaughtered, but the purchasing power might be preserved through a non-correlated asset and everybody gets to play, the only thing that's missing is a coordinated effort from a multipolar system to say, buy, buy, buy. You guys buy 5,000, we buy 5,000, China buys 5,000, we make that year one, year two, it's 6,000, year three, it's 7,000. And they don't have to go out and print undiscriminate amounts of money. They could just do that. And that would pretty much guarantee that all of them get to beat a parabolic curve of debt with a parabolic curve of growth.
Yeah, are the Chinese really willing to write off all of their U.S. treasuries? Because I think the administration would be willing to take it all away to the brink and just say, well, we'll seize them or we'll freeze them. So isn't that our leverage?
I also think, yeah, but it's also, where are they going to sell their goods? I mean, who is going to buy all of these goods? That's the big question. Like, basically, they're already in a recession. It's going to effectively shut down their economy. So you can look at all the leverage points. I think that's the biggest one.
They're already in deflation if you look at the most recent data.
That's my point, is like it seems to me like, look, the really, really, really scary point for all of these economies is when nobody wants to sell, because that's when you've lost confidence. And so if there is a way by which they can hit a reset button without really, you know, hitting a reset button, because let's face it, they're not going to cancel each other's debts. They're just not going to do that. So the only other out is to artificially inflate something. What can you artificially inflate that doesn't break everything? But it's not oil, and it's not the euro dollar, and it's probably not the BRICS. So what you going to do?
And I think it's important that we circle back and tie this into Bitcoin specifically for each and every one of us, and especially those who may be new to the space or new to Bitcoin. The reason why it's so different is because it's decentralized. There is nobody in control, and it doesn't matter what happens in this trade war. One Bitcoin, it will always equal one Bitcoin. They can't inflate it away like they can with anything else. If every single country went to a Bitcoin standard to kind of circumvent all of this, it wouldn't matter to Bitcoin, simply because there'll only ever be 21 million. And so that's an extremely important thing to remember, is that as this continues, you're going to see more people flee to it. And I think that's an important thing that we have to make sure everybody understands, is Bitcoin is what's going to come out as the standalone winner, I believe, in this confrontation. Well, we went past the top of the hour. Gentlemen, do you have anything else you'd like to go ahead and hit on before we start wrapping up the show?
No, I would just say, you know, this is like what we've all been talking about, what I've been screaming from the rooftops for a year. Like it's all coming out, you know, kind of just, it's unfolding. We are in the midst of some really incredible times. So like, hold on, because if I'm right, or in my analysis, it's going to get even crazier. And so yeah, just hang on, try to keep a calm head, you know, cool head. I firmly believe that Bitcoin will benefit from all of this, you know, in the long run. So just kind of like hang tight. It's fun to watch, right? But just hang tight. Don't make any, you know, kind of rash decisions. Don't use leverage. All the normal kind of advice, you know, and just hang on, because it's gonna get crazy. It's kind of already at the point that it's pretty crazy, I would argue. So just, you know, don't use leverage. Don't make rash decisions. Just kind of hang on, enjoy the ride. It'll be, you know, get your popcorn, because it's pretty good entertainment.
I highly recommend the book by Bitcoin veterans friend, Lawrence Lepard, The Big Print. Again, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, I think the timing of this book is pretty good, simply because of what's going on right now. Wade, I see you have your hand up.
No, I'm good, guys. Thanks for the space.
Bob Eomar Astro, or Asteroid, sorry.
I would echo Robert's sentiment. Don't panic. make sure that you use this time to learn about Bitcoin and all of these things that are going on. Are a lot of it's noise, and might take some time, but we'll see it, and we'll see how it plays out. But also to Coleman's point, central banks will have to intervene. We've already seen it from the Indian central bank. They've already decreased rates. We're going to continue to see it from other central banks until inevitably, I think the Fed has to inject some liquidity if it's not already doing so. So hang tight, chill out, use this time to learn about Bitcoin if you don't know about it, or the asset you already hold if you do know about it. And yeah, everything's going to be just fine.
So I'll just leave you guys with $5 a day is not a burger you're going to miss. Go buy some Bitcoin.
Do you know where I can get a $5 burger? Because that'd be pretty nice.
That's true. I haven't thought about the price of inflation in burgers.
Hey, Trump.
Just don't get the fries and the drinks.
Just get a kid meal burger by itself, a la carte. Should just be a couple bucks. But Trump said prices are coming down, so hopefully we can get back to that $5 burger and $5 wrench attack. But I do want to make sure that everyone understands that may be new to this space. Again, Bitcoin, if you're buying it, buy it from a reputable exchange. Our go-to is River Financial or Strike. Those are going to be the two best options. Not your keys, not your coins is another Bitcoin adage we always use. If you have questions about that, look what happened with FTX, Mt. Gox, all of that nonsense. Hold your own keys. Use a hardware wallet that's trustworthy. We use coin or cold card over here, the MK4 or cold card Q. Those are going to be the best hardware wallets. But it's just very important not to get over your skis. Again, don't take out leverage. $5 a day doesn't seem like much, but it does add up. And this way you're guaranteed not to be tempted to take that money and spend it before you should. But that is everything I have. I do want to thank everybody who tuned in, all the new listeners. If you are a veteran, and this is the first time you've heard us, or even if you're not, I encourage you to go to bitcoinveterans.org. Click on that connect form, sign up. We're not going to spam you with anything, but we have dedicated chats and channels that'll be that we can answer any question that you have, whether it's Bitcoin, whether it's mining, hardware wallets, or even if homesteading, firearms training, or if you want to get in regional chats to see and meet other Bitcoiners in your area, we have a group or chat for you. So please sign up for that and let us help you along your journey. Again, thank you everybody who participated today. I want you to enjoy the rest of it, but whatever you do, do not shitcoin. It's like putting glitter on a turd and calling it a treasure.